Thakur Kijai. Premsiko Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Kijai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopi Gopinath Shyamakund Radhakund Gita Govardhan Kijai. Vrindavan Dham Kijai. Mayapur Dham Kijai. Navadvip Dham Kijai. New Dwarka Dham Kijai. Their Divine Lordship Shri Shri Rukmini Dwarkadis Kijai. Their Divine Lordship Shri Shri Jagannath Baldev Shimati Subhadra Kijai. Their Divine Lordship Shri Shri Gornitai Kijai. Garantara Srimad Bhagavatam Kijai. Transcendental Book Distribution Kijai. Harinam Sankirtan Jaga Kijai. Transcendental Prasadam Distribution Kijai. Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bo. All glories to all the assembled devotees, Hare Krishna. All glories to all the assembled devotees, Hare Krishna. All glories to all the assembled devotees, Hare Krishna. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Gaur Sri Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is third canto, chapter 4, Vidura Approaches Maitreya. We're on text number 2. And today's class will be entitled Tad Anunjata. Tat means by the Brahmanas, and Anujanata means being permitted. So we'll explore this particular aspect of Krishna and his devotees. How Krishna works through his devotees. So this is, we'll be referring to different references in the Srimad Bhagavatam relating to this pastime of Krishna leaving the material world or leaving his manifested form here in the material world. So the verse. Tesham Maraya Doshena. Tesham Maraya Doshena Visamikrita Chetasam Visamikrita Chetasam Nimlochati Ravav Acid Nimlochati Ravavis Acid Venunam Iva Mardanam Venunam Iva Mardanam Tesham Mareya Doshena Vishami Kritta Chetasam Nimlochati Ravavasid Venunam Iva Mardanam Tesham Maraya Doshena Visham Ikrita Chetasam Nimlochati Ravavasid Venunam Iva Mardanam Tesham Maraya Doshena Vishamikrita Chetasam Nimlochati Ravavasid Venunam Iva Mardanam. Swabhadantikam. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So the verse again. As by the friction of bamboos, destruction takes place, so also at sunset, by the interaction of the faults of intoxication, all their minds became unbalanced and destruction took place. So in this purport, Srila Prabhupada says, refers to the word tad anujnata, which he said the Lord wanted them to be so destroyed, and thus they obeyed his order. And that's actually a word from the previous sloka that was given yesterday. Tat, which means by the brahmanas, anujnata, being permitted. And that was the title of the class today. So through the brahmanas, Krishna gave his order, in other words. So as I mentioned, there's other references which describe this particular, and illuminates this particular verse. So this is from the third canto. And it goes, when they quarrel among themselves, influenced by intoxication, with their eyes red like copper because of drinking madhu, then only will they disappear. Otherwise, it will not be possible. On my disappearance, this incident will take place. So this madhu is a kind of liquor made from rice. I think in Japan they make something similar. It's called shaki. So, anyway, this is a nice purport I'd like to read. Srila Prabhupada mentions here for this verse. The Lord and his associates appear and disappear by the will of the Lord. They're not subject to the laws of material nature. No one is able to kill the family of the Lord, nor is there any possibility of their natural death by the laws of nature. The only means, therefore, for their disappearance was the make-show of a fight amongst themselves, as if brawling in intoxication due to drinking. Brawling reminds you of a bar fight going on. This so-called fighting would also take place by the will of the Lord. Otherwise, there would be no cause for their fighting. Just as Arjuna was made to be illusioned by family affection, and thus the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, so the Yadu dynasty was made to be intoxicated by the will of the Lord and nothing more. The devotees and associates of the Lord are completely surrendered souls. Thus, they are transcendental instruments in the hands of the Lord and can be used in any way the Lord desires. The pure devotees also enjoy such pastimes of the Lord because they want to see him happy. Devotees of the Lord never assert independent individuality. On the contrary, they utilize their individuality in pursuit of the desires of the Lord. And this cooperation of the devotees with the Lord makes a perfect scene of the Lord's pastimes. So another nice sloka from the fourth chapter of the third canto. There's two actually here. Sukadeva Goswami replied, my dear king, the cursing of the brahmanas was only a plea. But the actual fact was the supreme desire of the Lord. He wanted to disappear from the face of the earth after dispatching his excessively numerous family members. He thought to himself as follows. By practical experience also, let's go to that. And then we'll come back. Now I shall leave the vision of this mundane world, and I see that Uddhava, the foremost of my devotees, is the only one who can be directly entrusted with knowledge about me. So in the previous verse, in the purport, I'd like to read a paragraph there by Srila Prabhupada. By practical experience also, it is seen, up to the present day, that the Lord's transcendental form is worshipped by devotees in different temples. And all the devotees of the Lord factually realize that the form of the deed in the temple is non-different from the form of the Lord. This inconceivable performance of the internal potency of the Lord is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Naham prakasya sarvasya yogamaya samavrita. The Lord reserves the right of not being exposed to everyone. In the Padma Purana, it is said, Atta Shri Krishna Namari. The name and form of the Lord cannot be perceived by material senses. But when he appears within the vision of the mundane people, he assumes the form of the Virat Rupa. This is an additional material exhibition of form and is supported by the logic of a subject and its adjectives. So in grammar, when an adjective is taken away from the subject it modifies does not change. So similarly, when the Lord quits his Virat Rupa, his eternal form does not change. Although there is no material difference between himself and any one of his innumerable forms. In the fifth canto, it will be seen how the Lord is worshipped in different planets in his different forms, even now, and how he is worshipped in different temples of this earth also. So this is Krishna explaining how he has the right to not being exposed to everyone and anyone. So he keeps himself out of the vision of the non-devotees. So in the same way, his pastime of his disappearing to non-devotees, they may not understand, and they will think that, actually, look, see, your Lord, he passed away. You know, he's just a regular human being. So in the purport to the second verse I read, Prabhupada mentions how Uddhava was considered the best among the devotees at that time. And therefore, he was directly instructed by the Lord's grace so that people might take advantage of Uddhava's knowledge after his disappearance. So this is one of the reasons why Uddhava was advised to go to Bhadrak Ashram. And that's where the Lord is personally there as Naranarayan deity. So one who is transcendentally advanced can gain direct inspiration from the temple deity. And thus a devotee of the Lord always takes shelter of a recognized temple of the Lord in order to make tangible advancement in transcendental knowledge by the grace of the Lord. So we're seeing how Krishna, in all his forms and manifestations, they're eternal. And we could take advantage of them, even here, right before our eyes. Krishna's there. So there's another verse here from the third canto, fourth chapter. The Lord's glorious acts and his acceptance of various transcendental forms for the performance of extraordinary pastimes in the mortal world are very difficult for anyone other than his devotees to understand. And for the beasts, they are simply a mental disturbance. So here Prabhupada's referring to beasts, or the verse is referring to beasts as those who are envious of the Lord. And so they're classified amongst the beasts. And then Prabhupada says here that the miscreants who are simply concerned with material enjoyment, who work very hard like beasts of burden, can hardly know the personality of God at any stage due to asurika bhava, or the spirit of revolt against the Supreme Lord. So then Prabhupada says, the more they discuss the transcendental appearance and disappearance of the Lord in the asuric spirit, the more they enter into the darkest region of hell, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 16:20. Anyone who is against the transcendental loving service of the Lord is more or less a beastly creature, as confirmed in this verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So these are some nice verses that relate to this verse. So we see that it's described in the Krishna book and in the 10th canto in the beginning. It described that how when the earth was overburdened by these demoniac rulers, the personified earth, Bhumi, approached Lord Brahma with tears in her eyes, begging for relief. So Brahma immediately went with the demigods to approach the Supreme Lord in his form here as Chirodaksai Vishnu. And as the demigods waited on the shore, the Supreme Lord announced to Brahma that he would soon incarnate to the earth and that he would also have the demigods come and assist him in his pastimes. So right from the beginning of his appearance, it's understood that Krishna would come to remove the demons. So this is nicely described. So as we know, in the Bhagavad Gita also describes that when there's a predominance of such chaotic, irreligious societies on earth, he will personally descend to rectify the imbalance. So right from the beginning of Krishna's infancy, actually, he was systematically killing all these powerful asuras or demons. They were actually intolerable for the earth. And Lord Krishna was assisted by his brother, Balaram, who is also the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So although Krishna is one, he expands himself into many forms at once. That's his omnipotency. And the first expansion is Balaram. So Balaram killed many noteworthy demons also. You know, Danakasura, Devaveda, and the envious Rukmi. And then also Krishna was accompanied by members of the Yadu dynasty, and many of them were demigods, and they had descended to assist the Lord. So we see he killed many demons in his youth and Krishna's pastimes, but because of an offense to the Pandavas, there were so many numerous offenses against them. Duplicitous gambling, verbal insults, the seizing of Draupadi's hair, many cruel transgressions. So the Supreme Lord engaged the Pandavas as the immediate cause to execute his will. And this was in the pretext of the battle of Kurukshetra. So Lord Krishna arranged for all the kings who were burdening the earth to assemble with their armies and on the opposite sides of the battlefield. And then Krishna killed them through the agency of war. You know, and then in that way relieved the burden of the earth. So Krishna wanted to complete his mission by removing these impious persons. And he had empowered Arjuna and other Pandavas to remove these impious kings. So they were personally acting through Krishna in this way. So there's a nice verse from the 11th canto and describes her amazing Krishna's, just by seeing Krishna in this battlefield, all the warriors, people that died, they gained their spiritual body, similar to the Lord's. So this is Krishna. If you die in front of the Lord, then you're actually liberated. So this is how you know, powerful Krishna is. So this pastime is described in the 11th canto, in the first chapter, and in the last two chapters, this pastime. So King Parikshit was asking, he said, after the great devotee Uddhava left for the forest, what did the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the protector of all living beings, do in the city of Dwarka? So because we see Krishna was playing the part of an ordinary member of the Yadu dynasty, it appeared that he had to react to the curse of the Brahmanas and gave up his earthly pastimes. But actually, Krishna can't be cursed by anyone. Narada Muni, other sages who cursed the Yadu dynasty are eternal devotees of Krishna. So how could they hardly curse Krishna? So therefore, in giving up his pastimes and leaving his earth with the Yadu dynasty, he demonstrated his internal potency by his personal will. So nobody can challenge the potency or even the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur revealed that although many demigods had taken birth in the Yadu dynasty to assist the Lord, some of the members of the Yadu dynasty were actually inimical towards Krishna. And because of their mundane vision of the Lord, they considered themselves to be on the same level as Krishna. Because they took birth in the family of Krishna, they had inconceivable strength. and then they misunderstood Krishna's supreme position. So having forgotten that, they would create a great burden on the earth. So therefore Krishna said that it has to be necessary for them to be removed. So even though in the eyes of ordinary people, the members of the Lord's own dynasty, they're actually always worshipable. But Lord Krishna detected by their intimate association with him, some of the members of the outer dynasty became indifferent to his will. And because of these whimsical members, they thought they could act freely, do whatever they want. And this would actually cause, you know, this whimsical behavior would cause such a bad burden on the earth. So the Lord, whose desires are inconceivable, he began to consider the need to annihilate them, you know, of his Yadu family. So there's some interesting purports in this 11th canto, which they are quoting Jiva Goswami. And we don't have time to read them all, but there's a few here that I'd like just to point out. How Jiva Goswami pointed out that the members of the Yadu dynasty, they're never to be considered irreligious. And Vaishnava Acharyas have mentioned that the story of the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty is especially meant to help the conditioned souls achieve liberation from the bondage of the materialistic life. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his members of the Yadu dynasty, they were personal associates of him, were also endowed with inconceivable opulences. Therefore, when we see how fratricidal war suddenly deprived the members of the Yadu dynasty of all their earthly possessions and even their lives, we can understand that there's no permanent position within this mature world, whether you're in the Yadu dynasty or you're an eternal associate of the Lord. So he wanted to show that this place is not our home, and this is the temporary nature of this world. So it doesn't matter who you are, you know, this place is not our eternal home, so don't try to make it. So so Krishna was, I mean, Sukadeva Goswami was explaining to Maharaj Parikshit how, so Krishna was observing many disturbing signs in the sky, in the earth and the outer space. So these are like bad omens. So he told them, he came all together in a council, and he saw these omens like halo around the sun, earthquakes, and there was an unnatural redness on the horizon. So Krishna saw these things, so he brought everybody together and he told him about these omens. And he said that they have appeared in Dwarka just like the flags of death. We shouldn't remain here any longer. So this is where he asked them that you should take all these women, these old men, and leave the city. And let's go to Prabhas Chaitra. And that's, you know, where they can perform some bathing ceremonies. They could fast. They could fix their minds on meditation. And then they could worship the demigods. And then present various offerings. And then after performing these rites, with the help of the brahmanas, we'll worship the brahmanas by offering them cows, land, gold, elephants, all these things. And indeed, the appropriate process for counteracting these bad omens is sure to bring about the highest good fortune, he was telling them. So we should worship the demigods, the brahmanas, the cows, and that way we can earn the highest birth of all living entities. So having heard all these messages from Krishna, the elders of the Yadu dynasty said, okay, so be it. So they went on their chariots to Prabhas. So Krishna's plan, how we'll go back a little further now. There's a saying that says, and we mentioned this, that familiarity breeds contempt, right? And there's another one, that casualty or being casual can cause casualty, especially if you're casual towards great souls. That can lead to casualty. And what greater casualty than offending these great souls, and they cursed the entire dynasty, the Yadu dynasty, to be wiped out. So, going back to the 11th canto here, the first chapter. So King Pariksit inquired, how could the Brahmanas curse the Rishnis, who were always respectful to the Brahmanas, charitable and inclined to serve senior and exalted personalities, and whose minds are always fully absorbed in the thought of Lord Krishna? So this is a big question here. So Sukadeva Goswami said, the Lord who bore his body as the amalgamation of everything beautiful dutifully executed the most auspicious activities while on the earth, although he was, in fact, without any endeavor, already satisfied in all desires, residing in his abode and enjoying life. The Lord whose glorification is in itself magnanimous now wanted to annihilate his dynasty, as there still remains some part of his duty to be carried out. So there's some really nice purports here that are described. So this is at the holy place after they perform their sacrifices in Pindaraka. The young boys of the Yadu dynasty had brought Samba, son of Jambavati, dressed in woman's garb. Playfully approaching the great sages gathered there, the boys grabbed hold of the sages' feet and impudently asked them with feigned humility, O learned Brahmanas, this black-eyed pregnant woman has something to ask you. She is too embarrassed to inquire for herself. She is just about to give birth and is very desirous of having a son. Since all of you are great sages with infallible vision, please tell us whether her child will be a boy or a girl. You see, they're so puffed up. So this is what happens. And this amazing purport, it talks about how this dress represented the sahajas who dress in women's clothes and so many false yogis. And these, it talks about all these different fake sampradayas and things. So in the next verse, thus ridiculed by deceit, the sages became angry. O king, and told the boys, fools, she will bear you an iron club that will destroy your entire dynasty. So this is what they got. So they, you can imagine, these boys, they freaked out and they went back to the king, who was Ugrasena. So here in the, continuing with the first chapter here in the 11th canto. Upon hearing the curse of the sages, the terrified boys quickly uncovered the belly of Samba, and indeed, they observed that therein was an iron club. Wow. So there's a purport here I'd like to read that, anyway, this shows that this is a club of duplicity can never bring peace found in the society of devotees. Rather, duplicity smashes all the non-devotional activities and whimsical doctrines of the pseudo-devotees. So this is that casual, being casual became a casualty. The young man of the Yadu dynasty said, oh, what have we done? We are so unfortunate. What will our family members say to us? Speaking thus and being very disturbed, they returned to their homes taking the club with them. The Yadu boys, the luster of their faces completely faded, brought the club into the royal assembly, and in the presence of all the Yadavas, they told King Ugrasena what had happened. O King Pariksit, when the inhabitants of Dwarka heard of the infallible curse of the Brahmanas and saw the club, they were astonished and distraught with fear. The curse of the Brahmanas, they say, it's so powerful that it can't be counteracted, just like the sun can't be stopped from rising. So after having the club ground to bits, King Ugrasena of the Yadus personally threw the pieces along with the remaining lump of iron into the water of the ocean. Actually, he didn't tell Krishna about this. He just thought that he would get rid of it. A certain fish swallowed the iron lump, and the bits of iron carried back to the shore by the waves implanted themselves there and grew into tall, sharp canes. The fish was caught in the ocean along with other fish in a fisherman's net. The iron lump of the fish's stomach was taken by the hunter Jara, who fixed it as an arrowhead at the end of his shaft. Knowing fully the significance of all these events, the Supreme Lord, though capable of reversing the Brahmana's curse, did not wish to do so. Rather, in his form of time, he gladly sanctioned the events. So like that verse we mentioned, that it was through the Brahmanas that Krishna's will is being brought out. So he maintained the curse. So Krishna here is leaving a vivid lesson for living entities of this age that any so-called religious person, even if he is so exalted as to take birth in the Lord's personal family, cannot violate the respect and reverence which is due to the pure devotees of the Lord, such as Narada Muni. The principle of serving the pure devotee of Krishna is so essential for advancement that the Lord exhibited the inconceivable pastime of causing the destruction of his entire dynasty just to impress this point upon the conditioned souls of Kali Yuga. Well, so just see how powerful that is. So in the purports there, they're quoting many different points. And again, it's bringing a point about how just as Krishna brought about a frivolous quarrel to destroy his family, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu arranged for the world to be flooded by varieties of Mayavad and Karmavad philosophies just after his disappearance. He did this to destroy persons who belong to the 11 Asampradayas. So this is all described there in detail if you'd like to read that. So here's what happened. So Krishna couldn't personally kill, you know, all the Yadav dynasty. They're under his protection. So in the guise of a curse, he had them killed in this way. So anyway, we'll go to the 30th chapter of the 11th canto. There it describes that with great devotion, the Yadavas performed the religious ceremonies according to the instructions of Krishna, as we mentioned. And then their intelligence covered by providence, they liberally indulged in drinking the sweet Maya beverage, which completely intoxicated their mind. And then they became intoxicated in their extravagant drinking, and then they were bewildered by the potency of Krishna, and then they had a terrible quarrel. And this is what happened. So they actually fought each other. So they actually, this curse came to pass, and it was through Krishna's desire, through the curse of the devotees, that this is amazing lessons that are being taught here. And there's so much points to bring out, but anyway, I'd just like to mention here in one of the purports. So Srila Prabhupada, who was the author of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he was born in a family of pure devotees, and he himself exhibited all the symptoms of the pure devotee from his very childhood. And he eventually came to the West and exhibited unprecedented spiritual potency in establishing Krishna consciousness all over the world. And there's so much he did. So therefore we may think that would offer all reverence and worship to the members of Srila Prabhupada's immediate family. But since by Krishna's arrangement, these family members are not at all on the platform of pure devotional service, the members of ISKCON gave them hardly any attention, but instead worship those who actually exhibit the qualities of highly advanced Vaishnavas, regardless of their so-called birth. So in other words, birth, it cannot constitute the qualification for being a respectable person, even if you're born in the Lord's own family, or even in the family of a pure devotee. So what to speak? So in this way, in fact, I heard that one of Srila Prabhupada's sons became an initiate devotee of one of his disciples. So this happened. So just see. So this is what happened. They became infuriated. And, you know, they actually seized their bows and arrows, their swords, clubs, all their different weapons, and they attacked each other on this ocean. They're actually riding on elephants and chariots and camels, bulls, and even human beings. And they're enraged. And they came at each other and they attacked each other. So their animosity aroused. It describes who fought with who, like Pradyumna fought with Sambha and Akura against Kuntibhuja. All these different names are mentioned. So they completely abandoned their natural friendship and they all killed each other. And after they finished all their bows and arrows, then they started taking these stalks of bamboo which absorbed that iron, and they became like iron rods. And they began to actually attack one another with these. And they even tried to attack Krishna and Balaram when Krishna and Balaram tried to stop them. So then Krishna and Balaram just started to kill them also. And this is what happened. This is how they gave up the mortal world. So from the Hari Vamsa, it described that this Jara was actually Bhrigu Muni. And this was his curse because he kicked the Lord in the chest. If you remember that story, we won't have time to go into that. But then he became a hunter and a meat eater. And Krishna was thinking how to bring him back home. So he had him engaged and assist in his pastimes. So when Krishna saw that Lord Balaram departed after this fight, Krishna sat underneath a peepal tree, or a peepala tree, I guess you pronounce it. And then he was exhibiting this brilliant far-armed form, and it was so beautiful. And all his weapons they personified themselves around Krishna. And it was describing Krishna's beauty there. And there he sat with his left foot, with his lotus sole on his right thigh. And then this hunter Jara, who had approached the place, mistook the Lord's foot as a deer. And then he shot, you know, but he actually didn't pierce it. How could you pierce Krishna's foot? So when he came to see his prey, he saw this foreign personality and he became terrified. And he bowed down to his feet. It said he bowed down to his feet. He didn't take the arrow out of his foot because it was just there. It just touched his foot. And then he began to say that I'm so sinful out of ignorance. You know, please forgive me. I did this. And so he said, please kill the sinful hunter of animals immediately so that I might not commit these offenses again. But this is an interesting story, and the purport there describes how it's stated that the hunter then arrived with the intention of killing a deer. But they said this is very highly unlikely, because with more than 560 million warriors were killed in this uproarious battle that took place. You know, there was blood flowing everywhere, corpses were everywhere. So how could a simple hunter come along there and try to kill a deer? And deer are very timid, you know, they're very fearful. How could they be there in that scene? So how could this hunter calmly come about his business in the midst of all this carnage? So this is to show that this is Krishna's potency for winding up his pastimes. He could do him anything. So anyway, he was asking for forgiveness there. And the Supreme Personality of God, he said, don't fear. Just get up. What you've done is actually my own desire. With my permission, you can go to the abode of the pious and the spiritual world. So he sent him back to Godhead right there. And an airplane, he went and carried him to the spiritual sky. So then, the whole story begins. Daruka comes and then he tells him, you have to go and take the people out of Dwarka. So this is where Krishna actually ascends to the spiritual world. So all the demigods and all the members of the Yadu dynasty, they actually went back to Godhead with Krishna. So this is Krishna disappearing into the spiritual world. So there's so many more points, but, you know, we ran out of time and the kirtan ends late. But I'd like to just mention a couple of things here. That when Krishna was leaving, he actually closed his eyes because all the demigods appeared there and they were thinking, oh, Krishna's going to come to our planet. You know, so... But Krishna closed his eyes to show that actually when you leave in your body, you should close your eyes and meditate upon me. So this is the point that we should, when at the time of death, we should think that of Krishna. And that way we could go back home, back to Godhead. So anyway, let's see here. Anything else I might want to just end with here? So there's one last verse that describes here. The all-auspicious exploits of the all-attractive incarnation of Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality Godhead, and also the pastimes he performed as a child are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures. Anyone who clearly chants these descriptions of his pastimes will attain transcendental loving service unto the Lord Krishna, who is the goal of all perfect sages. So thank you for staying over time 10 minutes to hear the rest of the story. And if there's any comments or questions anybody wants to ask, maybe. Yes, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna. Gaurachandra Prabhu, thank you for the very nice vigil class as always. And my question is, you said that Srila Prabhupada's son was initiated by Srila Prabhupada. Is that correct?
One of his sons, yeah. Yes, that was correct. He became a disciple of one of his disciples. Jai. Okay. Thank you again for your kind attention. All glories to Srimad Bhagavatam. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.